And welcome back to the DX Audio Service for June 1993. I'm Fred Volpe, and let's get right back into our Musings from Members column in line number two.
Hey, this is Mark Marino from Long Beach, California. A couple of things I'd like to share with you guys. We have a real strangity around here. I have discovered that apparently KOLA 99.9 out of San Bernardino and KBZT 94.9 out of San Diego, they're both oldies stations, and they both have exactly the same playlist. And either one or the other is just like a half a song ahead. Like if, say, you hear Good Vibrations on Cola, and then they'll play, Help Me Rhonda or something. If you check over to K-Best, they will either going to play that next song, the same one, or they just played it. I don't know if anybody, this is happening anywhere else in the country, but I thought you'd be aware of it. In addition, I'd like to say that I just read an article in the April 26th LA Times about a blind broadcaster named Don Wardlow, and I think he works out at WBIS, a Connecticut station, New Britain Red Sox or something. I was wondering if anybody could had a tape of that, and if they could maybe send it into the DX Audio Service, and we could hear, say, 2 or 3 minutes of his broadcast on the DX Audio Service. It's Don Wardlow and Jim Lucas is the team, and Don Wardlow does the color for the New Britain Red Sox AA baseball farm team. So I think that would be very interesting to have and hear how he sounds on the DX Audio Service. Until next time, it's Mark saying bye for now.
Thank you very much, Mark, for checking in with us on the Musings for Members column. And if you have something on your mind, something to say, give us a call today on the Action Line, which is area code 419-224-3916, 24 hours a day for DX Audio Service members only. And speaking of people we like to hear, let's hear from the tall guy with the sandy-colored hair, Mr. Phil Wayne, otherwise known as... This is Ed Richards. Join Chuck Rivers, the host with the most, with the DX Audio Service Market Scope, right here on WNBC New York.
NBC 66 WNBC.
Thank you, Fred, and hello, connoisseurs of the broadcast band. Phil Wayne in your face for another 14 minutes with Market Scope. As we treat your tweeters to a terrific tune-in to San Diego's AMs, part 3 of 17. Now, to welcome you back, here's, what's his name?
Welcome back to a survey of stations in extreme Southern California, both north and south of the border. On 1270 is a station from Tijuana, X-E-A-Z. I believe normally they run music, but because of the flood disaster in Tijuana, they were giving out information and taking phone calls.
Muy bien.
Yo le agradezco su llamada.
Entonces, gracias.
Ándale, adiós. Son las 10 con 10 minutos, estamos en Noti 13 de Radio Z13. Tenemos aquí la información del Seminario Diocesano de Tijuana, es la información básica para damnificados en su operativo Seminario de Tijuana de enero 16 de 93. A ver, otra llamada, buenos días.
Bueno.
¿Quién habla?
Pedro Gómez, Gustavo.
¿Qué pasó, Pedro?
Mira, se aconseja a los residentes de esta ciudad que se encuentran en tráfico.
At 1310, we have another Spanish outlet from Tijuana, but this time... You'll hear the sign on of XEC, and then you'll hear them a little later in the day when they were having a little bit of trouble taking some phone calls.
Desde Tijuana, Baja California, México, la ciudad más visitada del mundo, usted escucha XS Radio Enciso, con oficinas en Centro Comercial Enciso, de Boulevard Cuauhtémoc, casi esquina con Boulevard Agua Caliente, transmitiendo con una potencia efectiva radiada de 1000 watts en amplitud modulada, 1310 kHz.
Yeah. muchas gracias.
Ándale pues.
Felicidades.
Radio Enciso.
Exactamente 10 minutos para las 13 horas, 1 de la tarde.
Ah, perfecto.
Adelante, Arnoldo.
Sí, señor Raúl. Señor Raúl, hermano. Sí. Ah, Arnoldo, XS Radio Enciso.
Adelante, señora.
Estaba ahorita con una llamada.
Una llamada telefónica para Arnoldo. O sea, que contesta ahorita. Contestación, Arnoldo.
Sí, sí.
Por favor. ¿Ya? O sea, ¿ya tienes el enlace, Arnoldo?
Ya tengo aquí la persona. Sí, 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 señor Malo.
¿Quién se escucha?
Para cualquier unidad que haya emergencia, ¿sí? Y sufra descomposturas en el motor de arranque, en el tenedor, o problemas eléctricos.
Sí, señor.
Me sean enviadas aquí al taller y sin costo alguno, señor.
Bueno, para el auditorio que nos esté escuchando, señor Raúl Malo tiene un taller.
1360 en San Diego has KPOP, K-Pop. They have a 40s and 50s, 60s. Satellite format most of the time, but in the morning they have personality Jerry G. Bishop.
Some Glenn Miller to take us up to NBC News, the latest on the crisis in Iraq. It's 2 minutes till 7 on K-Pop. Latest on the crisis in Iraq from NBC News in about 20 seconds or so. Nice picture on the front page of the Union this morning of Hillary and Bill Clinton and Stevie Wonder and Michael Jackson and Chelsea and Diana Ross and Kenny Rogers. I'd like a review of that HBO inaugural show they had yesterday. Give us a call at 570-1360. Us, we are San Diego's KPOP AM 1360. It is 7 o'clock.
NBC Radio News. Special report, crisis in Iraq.
For me today, it was exhilarating.
7:05 in the morning, and waiting for Monica Zek, and there, her light just lit, and she is here and ready. And Monica, how's it looking?
Okay, it's looking like we're pretty slow out there, at least westbound 8 in the college area. Otherwise, traffic hopefully will be light.
Town at Lindbergh right now, it's 59 degrees, and at our K-pop studios in Kearney Mesa, 57 degrees.
Want no silver threads among the gold.
Though K-pop runs a pretty tight format, Jerry manages to squeeze some of that personality like he portrayed back in Chicago.
San Diego's K-pop, that's Frank. It's 20 minutes till 8 o'clock. Sounds like there's something wrong with the tape we're about to play, or try to play. It's too bad, because that was for my wife. It's her birthday, and it was her favorite song. This is the way The Wind Beneath My Wings by Bette Midler sounds when the tape cartridge it's recorded on is all messed up. That was for you, Liz.
This is my island in the sun.
Oh, she's going to hate me for that one.
Where my people have toiled since time begun.
Quarter to eight, time to review this date in history musically. All right, hit it, guys.
B is for the bed he gets you out of.
Today is Tuesday, January the 19th, the 19th day of 1993, the birthday of Desi Arnaz Jr. He's 40. Gene Stapleton is 70. Phil Everly is 54. Dolly Parton is 47. And Shelley Fabre is 49. And my wife, Elizabeth, is of indeterminate age.
I is for the itch he helps you scratch.
On this date in 1736, the inventor of the steam engine was born in Scotland. His name was James Watt.
S is for the sexy voice he's proud of.
Edgar Allan Poe was born in Boston in 1809. Why? Because he wanted to be near his mom.
H is for a heart of gold to match.
This date in 1861, Georgia seceded from the Union. Are they back yet? Yeah, they are back. Good. Okay.
O is for his optimistic outlook.
To state, in 1937, Howard Hughes set a transcontinental air record, flew his monoplane from L.A. to Newark, New Jersey in 7 hours, 28 minutes, and 25 seconds. Wow.
P is for his personality.
Howard was really cooking there, huh? In 1977, in one of his last acts in office, President Gerald Ford pardoned Iva Toguri Diakino, an American who'd made wartime broadcasts for Japan, as Tokyo Rose.
Put them all together, they spell Bishop.
Thank you, boys.
The morning man called Jerry G.
The music of the big bands was unique in a time that extended for little more than a decade. But the effect of that era was lasting, forming the basis for the popular music of the world. Big Band Jump brings back that sound each Saturday evening from 6 until 8 o'clock here on AM 1360, San Diego's K-Pop. It'd be great to have you with us. Big Band Jump, Saturday night, 6 until 8 o'clock.
Go to Greece and Italy and park free. I'm Jerry G. Bishop, and there's always 2 hours of free parking when you visit my two water's edge, where there's always 2 hours of free parking.
Hey, it's time once again for...
me, with Ray Charles, and a great song called Ruby.
1420 in Tijuana is XEXX.
Bueno, en unos cuantos, bueno, un minuto más o menos, y cachitos, nos vamos a ir al servicio informativo SIS. No se vayan.
La mujer embarazada cuando usa drogas, sin el cuidado médico, está haciendo a su hijo drogadicto antes de nacer. ADEPAR y el Sindicato de Trabajadores del Radio y Televisión, ESTIR.
Llame al Centro Nacional de Consulta. Del interior.
Estas son noticias SIS, informa Samuel Gálvez. Nuevo capítulo de confrontación entre Estados Unidos y los aliados occidentales contra Irak concluyó...
XEBBC, is it 1470?
Están escuchando El Público Opina, programa donde su opinión es importante. Marque el 85-66-61. Adelante, licenciado Becerra.
Pues sí. En realidad, como se ha dado cuenta el auditorio, estoy pasando el programa vía teléfono, lo cual ha sucedido en estos días. Pido mil disculpas por causas realmente ajenas a mi voluntad.
And at 1550 on the dial from Tijuana, XEVG.
Gracias. Hasta mañana por radio y por televisión.
Esta es XEBG, 1550 kHz, 1000 watts de potencia. Desde el Policentro de Tijuana, Avenida de los Olivos, 305, Fraccionamiento Cubillas, Zona Esmeralda.
En medio del restaurante...
It's bonus time at Market Scope. We have space enough to give you two of the Traveler's Information radio services I picked up at 1610 on the dial. The first one is from Chula Vista, and the next will be from the city of San Diego. Here's a little bit of each one of them.
The following is our Traveler Information Station, AM 1610, WNUB 568. Tall Ship, California, open on January 16th to January 24th. Learn about the state's telephone medical history during a free public tour on the Tall Ship, California.
The city of San Diego, with Balboa Park management staff and cultural institutions, hopes that your visit to Balboa Park will be a happy and rewarding experience. park information may be attained from the Balboa Park Administration Building, 235-1100, located at 2125 Park Boulevard, or from the Balboa Park Information Center, 239-0512, located in House Hospitality. This message is updated daily, WNPF 405 AM 1610.
I hope you've enjoyed this AM radio tour of America's finest city. I certainly had a lot of fun putting it together. Until next time, this is Mark Marino for the DX Audio Service saying bye for now.
Muchas gracias, Señor Mark. Except for that great K-pop segment, you'd never know we were in the States, would you? I'm Phil Wayne for the DX Audio Service, and I'll see all of your smiling faces next month. Speaking of smiling faces, here's one of the smilingest faces around the Audio Service studios. Keeps us wondering what he's up to now. Take it away, Jan Bowker.
Historical moments in radio broadcasting, bringing you stories of the early days of this exciting industry from the pages of logbooks, publications, and press releases, pamphlets, and historical accounts by those who lived it. And hello again, I'm John Bowker. Today I have a collection of items for you, some that look not too far back into history, but still help weave this fascination we all share for broadcast radio. I was reading this month in one of the trade journals of an apology from a writer of broadcast history who had overlooked the fact that while the United States government did indeed cause all radio stations to go off the air during World War I, that would be 1917 and 1918 for you youngsters, the radio station 9XM was allowed to stay on the air for broadcasts to entertain the servicemen at the Great Lakes Naval Training Station. Our historian goes on to explain that 9XM was classified as an experimental station and didn't become a broadcasting station until it received its broadcasting license in 1922. That was station WHA in 1922 in Madison, Wisconsin, of course. Now, our historian fails to explain, to my satisfaction at least, that all radio stations in this service were called experimental back during the teens. The term broadcasting for this purpose was generally attributed to David Sarnoff in his early memos to RCA management about getting into the business in the first place. So, once again, we have another bit of data for the next time we argue about which station was the first broadcaster. By the way, I'd be glad to argue the point with anyone at the Enfield Convention. Why not? At the upcoming Labor Day weekend. Look forward to seeing you there. Well, we're coming up to the 10th anniversary of cable radio. The earliest case of cable radio I can find started in 1983. And what was it? Well, this was a case where some teenagers who wanted to start their own radio station ran afoul of the law with their pirate station. And the FCC, of course, until one of them figured out that he could put an FM station on the local cable TV station, and people all over town could pick it up without any trouble at all. No license, no endless frequency search. Of course, it wasn't all beer and Skittles, as they say, but it sure beat not being on the air at all for those fellas. And, you know, again, if you'd like to know more about cable radio, we can chat about it in Enfield if you're interested. And we celebrate another anniversary this month, the development of the cymometer. That's right, the cymometer. Now, C-Y-M-O-M-E-T-E-R. Now, you know, I've been in this radio business since 1947 or so, and truthfully, I had never heard of the cymometer either. But it was an invention of Professor Fleming, the renowned British physicist. It seems that the excitement over Marconi's transatlantic transmissions in 1901 was so great that everybody wanted to get in on this new radio game, but Marconi and Fleming and another professor named Fessenden, later of fame in Madison, Wisconsin, the University of Wisconsin, all agreed that no two stations should operate on the same wavelength, because if they did, there would be terrible interference between the stations. But there was no way to measure wavelength from a radio transmitter in 1901, so Professor Fleming went to work on it and 2 years later came up with the cymometer, which worked so well that the U.S. Department of Commerce knew they could order all broadcasting stations to use a cymometer to measure their wavelength so they could all operate on the same wavelength. Did it make sense? No, but remember, they did it. It was 360 meters of wavelength for all broadcasters, about 830 on the dial, modern-day dials. And the interference was horrendous, made worse because some of the stations operated just a little bit off of the designated 360 meters. I guess because their seismometers didn't work very well. I don't know. Some days you just can't win for losing. Fascinating hobby. And look, if you can possibly make it to Enfield, Connecticut over the Labor Day weekend, I'll look forward to swapping stories about broadcasting with you. Should be a lot of fun at this year's convention up there. Now, just before leaving you this month, it's appropriate that we help celebrate some radio station anniversaries. WKBY in Chatham, Virginia signed on June 8, 1966. You know, they're at 1080 on the dial. They've been there for 27 years, and I don't have them on the DX Audio Service travelogue tape yet. How about that? We'll have to go into Chatham, Virginia. WBZN in Racine, Wisconsin, been on the air since June of 1950. KOBO in Yuba City, California, they came on the air in June of 1953. And the biggie this month is the station in the South that started programming tests this month, June 1930, WRDW, Augusta, Georgia. For Historical Moments in Radio, this is John Bowker.
Thank you very much, John. And let's take a look at the front page of DX News Magazine. If you'd like to receive a copy of Anarch's periodic publication called Update, please send one self-addressed stamped envelope and U.S. $1 or two IRCs or overseas U.S. $2 or four IRCs to publisher Bill Courage, that's K-U-R-R-A-S-C-H, at 5607 Lincoln Road in Ontario, New York, 14519. Anarch is not planning on offering subscriptions, and so no subscription payments will be accepted, as Update will be sent on a issue-by-issue basis only. Congratulations go out to Bob Gilfer and his wife, whose firstborn, Robert Wayne, arrived on April 18th at 6 pounds and 13 ounces. Paul Swearingen sends along thank yous to those members who have taken the time and the postage to send in both clippings and station logos to the Topeka address for use in DX News Magazine. Paul says that although we have room for only perhaps 20% of all clippings sent in, they all go to Radio Roundup, Radio Wave editors Pete Kemp and Laura McCusker, if not used immediately in DX News Magazine. Sam Cannon isn't old enough to remember the golden age of radio, but he knows enough about it to run Golden Age Radio. That's a store that buys, sells, and fixes old radio sets. According to Cannon, he always thought he was born at the wrong time. Cannon, a 42-year-old former police officer who, as he puts it, is not really into TV. He says, "Radio fascinates me. There's a charisma with radio not associated with television." So there he was, surrounded by 400 or so old radios, several of them blasting music from the 1940s and 50s via a Baltimore old-time radio station. "There's nothing like your old radio playing authentic music," said part-time radio repairman Frank Lepko, thereby dismissing all the newer music as inauthentic. In the basement of this old store in a neighborhood by Curtis Bay, Cannon keeps 10,000 used and still usable radio tubes, the light bulb-shaped cylinders that help power the sets. Newer radios use transistors instead of tubes. He also has 40,000 new tubes that aren't really new, but have never been used. Cannon has another 10,000 used tubes at his home, where he also has 65 radios. Cannon dates his radio mania to 1961, when his stepfather bought him an old shortwave set. At age 28, after retiring from the Baltimore Police Department on disability, Cannon held a succession of jobs but had no career for several years. Meanwhile, his radio collection grew. Then last year, he bought 87,000 used and 50,000 new tubes, along with 400 old radios from a collector who was moving from a house to an apartment. At first, Cannon had no place for them either. He said, "I turned down Seduck Street here and then saw this vacant storefront." The century-old grocery store had been vacant for 17 years. Cannon quickly made a deal with the owner, and Golden Age Radio opened for business in October. To help finance his business, Cannon found a collector in Pennsylvania and sold him the 87,000 used tubes that he just bought. "We took four good truckloads up to him," he says. "The gentleman just saves tubes." helping canonize his stepfather, Will Kramer, 65, a retired General Motors maintenance technician. Don Walsh, 58, a former electronic technician who Cannon calls our radio guru. Lepko, who works for a sheet metal company, and when she can, Cannon's wife, Karen, a senior auditor at a local bank. In Cannon's shop, there are no Walkmans and only a handful of transistor radios for novelty collectors. These are radios that are shaped like an antique car, or Popeye, for instance. He also has 24 old telephones and a 1953 Zenith television set. The signs of modern times are hidden. Behind an icebox door isn't a cassette CD player, only for emergencies. Cannon also has a touch-tone phone, and there's a fax in the back room, but I don't like to talk about that either. In the basement, Cannon keeps a computer which he plans to use to inventory his store contents, but he hasn't had enough time to get organized and put all the data in. Those are a few concessions to recent technology aside, however. Cannon's store excludes the sights and sounds of an earlier era. On the main level, there are stacks of old radio repair magazines, radio electronics. Wall shelves are lined with table models, mostly from the 1930s and 1940s. There are a few early ones with separate speakers. The floor is filled with consoles, including a rarity such as a 1922 Victrola converted by RCA into a battery-operated radio. There were only 50 made, and all were destroyed with the exception of this one, said Cannon, who has priced it as $5,000 plus with no expectations of a quick sale. Most of the radios, however, are priced to sell, so people can enjoy them, says Cannon. Especially popular, he says, are the cathedral and doghouse-shaped sets of the 1930s, which he says come and go with great frequency. No pun intended. His favorite is a 1946 Majestic radio whose slogan was Mighty Monarch of the Air. Price of that radio? $45. Another unusual one is the Portabar radio, which comes with a bottle, shot glass, and an olive dish for $285. Cannon marveled at a Radiola 33 with a 12-inch speaker priced at $250. He says, these radios have character. This represents a period in this country that never has been repeated as far as I'm concerned. He figures he's bought and sold over 300 radios and fixed about 200 since going into business. There were only two that I couldn't repair, he says. I just couldn't find a part. Cannon's greatest pleasure, however, is not from the sales, but from the satisfaction of his customers. He recalled a firefighter who brought in his mother's 1939 Crosley radio for repair. After Cannon and his helpers fixed it, the firefighter was on his knees listening to it play, crying. Such sentiment aside, Cannon says he imagines the excitement generated by early radio. You put yourself in the place of those people, he says. It must have been nothing short of miraculous for them to put their ears up to headsets in those old days and hear voices. It must have been unbelievable. I'm Fred Vobey on the DX Audio Service.
Ken Chatterton here. I've just finished reading an article that Andrew Heller wrote for the Flint, Michigan Journal. It's a tribute to a country music hero of his, and I guess of mine, too. Anyway, I thought maybe you'd like to hear it. Here's the article, just as Mr. Heller wrote it. I turned on the radio the other day, and there's Erotica by Madonna. So I switched stations, and now somebody's singing about suicide. Switched again, now somebody wants to kill a cop. Good grief, what's happened to the FM? I dialed all the way around the FM dial, and everywhere, the sound was enough to make my ears gnash their teeth. Prince, screaming about sex. Rappers, screaming about sex. Heavy metal groups, just plain screaming. Annoyed, I switched to AM. AM radio still has a shred of sanity left to it these days. I tuned in a news program. Singer, songwriter Roger Miller, dead at age of... Well, popular music's gone to hell, and now one of my heroes from a time when music was something special, not just something to mate to, is gone too. If you're under 30, maybe you don't remember Roger Miller, but I sure do. He came up with one of my all-time favorite songs, King of the Road, plus some other pretty cool stuff. He was from what I guess you'd call the old school. He didn't shake, rattle, and roll. He didn't scream. He never made a video, to my knowledge. I'm quite certain he never wore just his underwear on stage. Also, the closest he ever got to writing a profane lyric was Dang Me. He sang songs. That's it, he just sang songs. I know I sound like some old fogey when I say this, but I happen to think I'm not alone in believing that popular music today stinks. I don't know what happened to it. It was great in the 60s. It wasn't too bad in the 70s. But then in the 80s, it began to go downhill. Now it's 1990, and at the ripe old age of, well, never mind. I look at the list of top 10 and realize I don't know any of those songs. After listening to a couple of them, I really don't think I want to. And now, Roger Miller's gone, God rest his soul. Paper said he died of cancer. He was only 56. Well, there was something about that song. The jazzy bass solo it began with, the cool cat finger snaps, the melody, Roger's laid-back voice. Then there were those lyrics. Trailer for sale or rent, rooms to let 50 cents, no phone, no pool, no pets, ain't got no cigarettes. Let's see Prince write stuff like that. Even if he could, he'd probably squeal the words so badly you couldn't recognize them. Besides, he'd grab his crotch while doing so, which, come to think of it, maybe is why he squeals so much in the first place. But back to Roger. When I heard he died, I got out my album of Roger Miller's Golden Hits. It's got all the good stuff on it. Dang Me, You Can't Roller Skate in the Buffalo Herd, Do Wackadoo, and of course, King of the Road. I played that song so much that pretty soon those grooves are going to fall right off. My favorite part is when old Roger gets to the part where I'm a man of means, by no means, king of the road. What's so great about that song? You hear it and a part of you wants to live it. You want to ride the rails and head for Bangor, Maine, wild and free. And you want to do it just the way Roger sings it. You want the third boxcar on a midnight train. To hell with paying union dues. Goodbye, Roger. Many of us will miss you.
Thanks, Ken. The following is an excerpt from a review of the GE Super Radio 3 by John Gatzke in Radio World magazine on March the 24th, 1993. Now, considering the initial comments that have appeared in DX News, I thought that this might be of interest to those of you that would like to purchase the Super Radio 3, but have been a little skeptical because of some of the quote-unquote defective units that have escaped from the factory. As far as technical difficulties, a few early models of the GE Super Radio 3 made in the mid to late 1992 era were shipped from the factory with severe sensitivity problems. The factory did not catch all the bad ones before they got into the distribution channels. Now, according to Thompson, who is the Hong Kong manufacturer of the GE unit, would-be buyers can look at a four-digit date code, not the serial number, but the date code on the box or in the battery compartment to see if the product is a potentially defective unit. Check the second, third, and fourth numbers, which represent the year and fiscal week that it was manufactured. The first number represents the day of the week and is not important in identifying a bad radio. If the second number is 2, then it was built in 1992, which means it could be defective. Don't worry about the radio when the second digit is 3. Next, look at the last 2 numbers. If they are 42 or higher, the unit does not have a sensitivity problem. Those with 41 or earlier fiscal week codes should be audited before purchasing. Chances are, however, that most units built before the 42nd week are good, Thompson says. As far as Radio World listening tests go, during listening tests, some local stations were sampled, finally choosing WMZQ, an AM station, in Stereo Country with a strong signal. As Radio World and DX News readers know, a lot of markets don't have an abundance of music-formatted AM stations. The audible difference in switching from normal to wideband mode with the GE Super Radio 3 was immediate, with good results. With a strong station such as WMZQ, the radio sounded great. In a very crowded section of the band, however, the wideband mode produced more noise, but could be eliminated by minimizing the selecting of the normal position. In listening to nighttime skywave signals in wideband, the noise increased as the band became more crowded. The normal mode, however, brought in numerous listenable stations. Others who have tried out the radio agree that its performance is very good. It does an excellent job of tuning DX stations, says John Marino, NAB Manager for Technical Regulation Affairs, who sampled the GE Super Radio 3 for a week. The FM tuning performance was very good, too, with some stations benefiting from AFC switched in and others sounding better with it off. On strong signal classical and jazz stations, there was little background noise, and sometimes it is unavoidable in the FM stereo mode. According to GE, the Super Radio 3 guaranteed frequency response extremes meet the AMAX standard of 60 Hz to 7,500 Hz in the wide mode, and it will at least reach 2.3 kHz in the normal mode. That radio actually performed much better than Radio World's bench tests. Were you one of those people that tried to listen to the waning days of WNEW as a music station back on Friday, December 11th, 1992, but because of that major, as they called it, northeaster storm that knocked out the power, were unable to hear it? Well, through the magic of audio tape and one person's attitude of have boombox will travel, the final Mark Simone Afternoon Drive program and other waning moments of WNEW's history are available from CJA. The cassette, The Last Days of WNEW 1130 in New York, is a 90-minute composite offering you one last listen to WNEW's Morning Drive, the Midday Make-Believe Ballroom with Jim Harlan, and Afternoon Drive with Mark Simone. Now, you're going to hear some of the great moments in station history recalled as Simone chats with many different radio personalities. It also includes station jingles and various band leaders' renditions of the WNEW theme. WNEW first gained fame as a music station during the coverage of the Lindbergh baby kidnapping trials when announcer Martin Block played records during breaks in the trials coverage. If you may remember, WNEW being a news station couldn't afford to have live bands play in the studio, as it was a norm in that day. But Westwood One getting out of the radio ownership business and Robert F.X. Silliman each sold their half ownerships to Bloomberg Financial, and Business News is now broadcast at 1130 in New York. The Last Days of WNEW 1130 in New York is delivered on name-brand audio cassette and lists for $6 postpaid to North America, overseas at $1. WQXR AM New York decided to end its simulcast with 96.3 FM and pick up the big band nostalgia format early in December of 1992. A companion tape, The First Days of WQEW, lets you listen to the changeover from classical to American popular standards, and a sample of each air personality hired to keep the format going in New York City. Now, this tape also lists for $6 North America, $7 elsewhere. Those who wish to order both tape can do so for $10, $12 overseas. And CJ also offers some other historical material, such as the last days of WNBC, some WABC, and the startup of WFAN on 1050 and then on 660. An 18-page listing of tapes is available for a self-addressed stamped envelope with 52 cents postage on it, free with any order. If you'd like to contact these folks, you can write to them, CJA, letters CJA, Box 126, Lincroft, Lincroft, New Jersey, 07738. And be sure to tell them that you heard about this on the DX Audio Service. We've had several inquiries to the DX Audio Service wondering when After Dark number 4 is going to be out, and well, we're still in the process of putting it together. We're trying to get a dynamite issue out here for After Dark number 4 and try to make it better than number 3. I know number 3 was a fantastic issue with Jonathan Marks and Bruce Elving. So, and by the way, there still are issues available for $9.50 from the Publication Center, but we're still working on After Dark number 4. And, of course, if you have any suggestions, things that you'd like to hear on After Dark number 4, perhaps a question or two that you'd like to ask myself or any of the DX Audio Service editors, just drop them on a card or a letter and send them to me here at the National Radio Club DX Audio Service, care of Great Northern Broadcast Company, Post Office Box 5031, Lima, Ohio, 45802-5031. Thought what we would do is give Ken Chatterton a call on the telephone and find out what's happening up at the Publication Center and find out if we have any goodies for sale up at the Pub Center. Ken, how you doing?
Not too bad.
I understand it's a little cold up there.
It sure is, about 38 degrees tonight.
Well, you know, we only have about 70 degrees here, so I guess we're in the hot spot.
We warm up a little in the daytime.
Ah, I see. That's it, huh? Okay. Understand we have some goodies for sale at the Publication Center. What's this I hear about the beverage books, I guess they are?
Well, the beverage book and the loop book, both, we're offering at $1 off to anyone. Summer sale. That sale will last until September 1st.
Okay. And let's see. Also, I guess there's a special deal going on, the AM logs.
Yes. For right now, the AM log, if you still want the current book, the 93 book, we'll sell it for $10, postpaid.
Okay, let me ask you a question. Can one of the members, say, buy a book for a gift for someone else?
Sure can.
Oh, that'd be a great little gift.
Tell us where to send it. And if it is a gift and you want us to enclose a note to that effect, let us know.
Okay. And should we also make note that my birthday is July the 28th?
Okay, noted.
if I get a AM log show up at my door, I'm going to be very surprised, Ken. And let's see, also we have letter openers too, I understand.
Yes. I couldn't tell you the price right off the top of my head. I think it's
something like
$2.25 each, or two for $3.95.
Okay, that sounds like a good deal. And do we still have any coffee cups available? Every so often we get a inquiry about those.
We're getting down, but we still have a couple dozen.
Oh, I guess we should all start hurrying to get those coffee cups. And anything else that we got there at the Publication Center that's kind of a neat little goodie?
Oh, we're still carrying the FM Atlas. Getting toward FM DX season, if it ever warms up.
Mm-hmm.
The antenna books are still available. Of course, we still have the reprints. We're still offering various offers on the tapes, on both the 90-minute and 10-minute tapes. 4 and 12 cassette binders to store your tapes. Of course, After Dark 2 and 3 are still available. We have a tape on Latin America on the air. It's a sort of an air check from Latin American stations. Yes, those are the big items right now.
Okay, and can someone get a hold of a catalog of all the different things that we have?
All they have to do is write an ask for one.
Okay, and what's the address up there in the big city?
Oh, Post Office Box 164, Mansville, New York, 13661.
All right, and it wouldn't hurt to drop a little friendly note into you, huh?
Oh, we always like friendly notes.
Better than the unfriendly ones.
Oh, much better. Much better.
Thanks, Ken, for talking with us.
Okay.
All right. Ken Chatterton on the telephone from the National Radio Club Publications Center. I'd like to thank Ken for stopping in with us and finding out what kind of neat goodies we got up there at the Publications Center. Were you one of those people that happened to catch the WWJZ 640 test out of New Jersey there a while back, but didn't get a QSL card? Well, it seems that the station has been a little overwhelmed with requests. Apparently, the little station got out a little bit too well, because they said that because they're overwhelmed with reception reports, they're unable to verify reports. Therefore, if you have a report for WWJZ 640 and you'd like to get a verification from the station, what you need to do is contact Ron Musco, M-U-S-C-O, at Post Office Box 118 Poquonic, P-O-Q-U-O-N-O-C-K, Connecticut, 06064-0118, and he'll get you a QSL for WWJZ. And that wraps up this edition of the DX Audio Service for June 1993. We'll see you in July with a firecracker of an edition. So until then, 7-3 and good DX. Where do we come up with these things, anyways?